Well, it's great to be here with you. And I've got to say, of all the churches I've ever been to, you have the comfiest chairs I've ever seen in my life. Which I thought, that's a bit scary, because I thought, if I'm a bit boring, you could just nod off quite easily, couldn't you? So I hope, if you do, I won't be offended. I will talk much louder, though, and see if I can wake you up. It is a delight to be here. And today I hope what I bring is a sense of encouragement, maybe challenge, but also a bit brutally honest about myself. So sort of write this and show it to Susan and go, is that a bit heavy? She goes, oh, no, it'll be okay. So I hope it's not too heavy. But it starts a couple of years ago. And I'm going to... I like telling stories, and if I tell too many stories, you can wave. My wife, Susan, certainly will. She'll start making hand gestures to me that I've talked for too long. But I want to go back a few years, 2 or 3 years. It was 2 weeks before Christmas. Life had been a bit difficult. My faith journey had been difficult. And there'd been a lot of stuff bottled up, I think. And the words that weren't said to God that were just there. Maybe I let them out every now and again. But as I went to bed this one night, it's like it broke. And I just came out and I said, Jesus, or God, I can't remember if it was to Jesus or the Father. I said, I just don't believe you are the Saviour. I don't believe you're the Son of God. And you know, at one level it was interesting, at one level it was nearly a relief. I don't know if you ever finally, you know, when finally you go, there you go, it's out. I've kept that for long enough, now it's out. And so it was. And I went to sleep and the next morning, I think it was sort of like, I don't know if for those of you who have had a relationship in your early years, or maybe you're going through it, and you break up. Can you relate to that? Can you relate to having a long, you know, relationship with someone, and then you break up, and the next morning you go, oh my goodness gracious, what have I done? Oops. And it's like the whole world falls apart, you know? And it was like that for me. What did I say last night? What just happened? And I think I expected God to say, you know, it's okay. We got that off your chest. It's fine. But, you know, he was quite, in a sense, respectful to me. Because from that moment on, it was dead silence with God. I really felt like he disappeared. I had no desire to pick up a Bible, or these days to open Verse of Today, or whatever it is, app. It was like that spirit side of me had just died. To pray was just, for a long time after, it was just wooden. But it was like I said to God, I don't want anything to you, and he said, okay, all right, fair enough. And that was it. And I think from that moment, for the next little while, I went into a real panic. Because what came into me was actually fear. Because if you've grown up in a Christian faith, as I have, from a little tacker all the way through, then you hear about those that follow Jesus, those that don't. I all of a sudden had this dilemma. What have I just done to myself? Have I just doomed myself? You know, essentially, if you want to take to eternal damnation. But at one level, I've been honest. What have I just done to my family? What have I just done to those around me? What does this mean for my children? At some point, I have to come out and say, I'm sorry, I no longer have a faith. And it was fearful and a bit worrying. One of the problems was, as time went on, life went on. You know, if you go back to a relationship that's fallen apart for you, it's been an impact for the next 24 hours, 48, 72, week, 2 weeks, month. After a while, life becomes normal again. Does that make sense? Yeah? Well, if it is, life just went on normally. Except there was something sort of interesting for me. My job was leading a regional missional organisation. Now I felt a fraud. If I hadn't before, now it was interesting. But the scary thing is, life went on. I kept doing the job I was doing. I think I kept being a nice person. I kept going to church. I don't think, well, I can say nobody in that time came up to me and said, Dave, something's a bit out of kilter with you lately. In actual fact, there was only two people I ever told. One was Susan, and one was a pastoral care worker with Fusion. Only two people I ever told. And that was hard enough. Now, when I spoke to the pastoral care worker, I thought, this is it, because I work for a missional organisation. I've just come out and said I have no faith. I'm out of a job. I live on a property that's owned by Fusion. I'm out of a house. This is looking awkward. How do you explain to your kids, we're moving house because no longer work for who you work for, and it's all because of a personal decision, but you know, that's just being honest. You know, when I met this pastoral care worker who's older and wiser than me, do you know what he did? He didn't bat an eyelid. It wasn't that he didn't think it mattered, and it wasn't that he didn't think it was important. I think he was wise enough and old enough that he knew this actually isn't the end. This was actually just part of a journey. And he was willing to walk that journey with me. And in fact, it was at that moment, and that was some months later, that I connected with him. That was actually the first step back. To actually have someone else go, okay, that's how you feel in the moment, that's, yeah. But to ask some questions, and it was the journey back. As we kept sharing the journey, and 12 months later, I have to say the journey goes through, that my relationship with God now is actually deeper and stronger than it was before I said, no, I don't want any more to do with you. And it was a nice moment, I sensing God saying, a bit like the Israelites, your time in the wilderness is over. It's time to come back onto the journey and let's get going. So there is a good part to this story. You could be going, who am I listening to up there? Where does the story go? But it gave me a reflection. It actually gave me a moment, if you like, to step outside the church, outside Christianity, and look at it from outside. Because for a while there, I didn't see myself as part of it. I didn't see that I belonged in it. So I looked from outside. And while it was good that I put on a facade and I could just keep going and, you know, I wonder that I started to see the church a bit like, and Christian, you know, when I say the church, Christianity and things, with some cynical eyes. Not even cynical, more different eyes. And I wonder if we're... I've got a quote here from Gandhi. Do you know who Gandhi was? Yep. Funny looking fellow. We'll put this slide up, see if it... You see this? This is a quote from Gandhi. "I like your Christ. I do not like you Christians. Your Christians are so unlike your Christ." Interesting quote, isn't it? I like Christ. That's it. But you guys? When I say you guys, I'm talking to myself as well. Don't start thinking, oh, geez. And, you know, we could think, yeah, that's probably true. I like the next slide is how Mother Teresa summed up that one. Gandhi felt fascinated at knowing Christ. He met Christians and he felt let down. It didn't live up to what he thought it would. We now live in a post-Christendom, you know, post-Christian world. I can't believe, are you amazed how quickly society has changed? We only really need to look back 5 years, 10 years. And if you're like me, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, the world has changed rapidly. And it still is changing. I like this definition is post-Christian society is when the biblical story that once shaped our culture is no longer the narrative that gives meaning to life. Does that make sense? The biblical story that once shaped our culture is no longer the narrative that gives meaning or life. Essentially saying the world out there sort of for a while went with Christendom, if you like, and all that it brought and all the riches it brought and all the, you know, you don't have to do too much. The whole societal structure is based on a Christian, you know, basis. But now they're going, yeah, I'm not so sure. Not going to take it. There's a friend of mine who's at uni doing studies. She said, the interesting thing for the church is at one stage, it was seen as helpful. Does that make sense? The church was seen as helpful. Started schools, started hospitals, outreach. It was helpful. Then she said, society starts to see the church as unhelpful. There was a bit of a turn against it. Potentially, we're now in a world, and we live in a place where the church is seen as dangerous. I'll go off script and tell a little story. This could be risky. Susan will start shaking now, go, here he goes, it's going to get dangerous now. In Victoria, we run some housing services. Okay? For young people, so crisis accommodation. There was a young man, I think he's under 20, so you know, 15 to 20, that sort of age, and he's homeless, but as well he has a disease that his eyes are degenerating, okay? So he's going blind. So in the not too distant future, he will be blind. And he said, well, I really need a place to live where I can get used to it while I can see it and then someone to care for me and to help me make that adjustment. So they thought, oh, geez, that doesn't really fit into our accommodation service. What other networks are there? And the Fusion team there put out a call to other churches and other networks to say, this is the dilemma we've got. We've got this young person and... we're looking it away. Anyway, a single young pastor from a church, who I think might be in his 30s, said, look, I've got a house. I live in a house with a couple of rooms. I'd be happy, you know, share a house with him. And that was as far as the conversation got, okay? They had the beginnings of a conversation. Uh, Our CEO got called in to a tribunal over that. And the allegation was that Fusion had not warned this young person that moving into a house with a single male pastor put him at high risk of being sexually assaulted. So they called it in front of the tribunal to say, can you explain why you didn't warn this young person? And it was more than that. It was that the chances of that happening were very high. Can you make sense of? For some of society, the church is now seen as dangerous. The trust is so gone. Have to say, as they went to that tribunal fairly quickly, those that were, you know, and it included heads of departments from the Victorian housing people, fairly quickly went, this is a bit stupid, actually. So, you know, common sense did prevail. But it's a different world. In Victoria, our CEO will say, it is now the most hostile place. Schools are hostile to any church organisation or Christian organisation coming into schools. I think in Taz we're a bit behind, but I can tell you we've got to tread carefully at times. You know, there's been times when principals have clearly told me, you know, I'm just shooting a rock over, you know, what's that term? Shooting over your bow? A warning shot? You know where you are, you know what you can do, you know. Is that making sense? I wonder in this post-Christendom, the church, we're scrambling. The world's will change and we're trying to work out how we do this. And I wonder that the world is looking for something authentic. In my growing up in a church, and I grew up in a Presbyterian church in Canberra, big gothic looking place. Oh man, was it cold. It had ceilings would be three times the height of this, to the point that in the aisles they actually had little curtains on the side. And it wasn't anything spiritual, it was to stop the drafts coming down the pews. And it was a very, you know, traditional Presbyterian church. And you know, there was one person in the eldership there that I admired. Because at one point he walked away from the church, he said, I'm sorry, I can't do this anymore, I can't believe it anymore. And for something in there, I admired him because at least he said what he was thinking. And I wondered how many of the others thought the same but just stayed there and kept playing the game, if you like. I can relate to Gandhi and Mother Teresa. Because in that time that I walked away, every time I came to a Christian that I was encouraged by, I'd be disappointed by something else they said. I literally have two brothers who are both Christian, both doing Christian work. There's only three of us, but are at each other's neck sometimes. I'm not surprised that the Bible says, you know, talks about making peace with your brothers or your sisters, because I reckon they're the hardest. We've got three kids and we know the first one is completely different to the second one. And I thought, I think that's God's joke, you know. When he gave you a brother or sister, if you've got brothers and sisters, do you ever find, I'm so different to them. Why did he give me a brother or sister like that? He said, yep, well, you love that one. And if you can love that one, the rest of the world will be easy. Working with children, with Fusion, I have this delight of working with church leaders from right across the gamut. And that's one of Fusion's work, is that we work cross-denominationally. And it's a real delight to do that, because it's so rich, you know. At one moment to be with if I go the happy clappies, and then at the other to be with the smells and bells over there. But, you know, it's like getting different pictures of God, and it's really delightful. But at times I still have to listen to ministers and pastors and clergy bag out the other side. And I think, oh, why? So I can tell you, it's encouraging. You know, church together this afternoon won't get it all right, you know? And I'll be there, and I'll be sitting up the back going, why does the music have to be so loud? But at least someone's given it a go, you know? At least they're giving it a shot. And if we can see the other side, you know, I just love it. If you've never been to a traditional church and meditated and things, try it, because it's another way of God communicating. You know, come to church together. Just buy some earplugs at K&D on the way. You know, it'll be okay. But I think it's the hypocrisy, if you like, because that's often levelled at the church, and the integrity that has damaged us. Coming out of Christendom, when we just had the upper hand, the church had the upper hand, didn't we? That's, you know, this is the way society sees. But the wider community is going, you know, I'm not sure what I'm seeing is adding up. We have three beautiful girls, Sophie, Charlotte, and Isabella. And I came out one Saturday morning after having a sleep-in. And every now and again, they're allowed. Mum and Dad can have a sleep-in Saturday morning, and they're allowed to watch TV, you know, in the morning. And I sort of came out, and I heard this conversation. And I'll try not to name names because they're in the room. But you wait out. There was one going for the other about something. And actually, it was about... Actually, I remember. They wanted to come in and ask me something. And one was saying, I'm telling you, I know Dad better than you do. And you better not. And the other one's going, well, I know Dad better than you. And you better listen to me. And I'm thinking, this is interesting, because I'm standing around the corner listening. I wonder which one does. And then finally there was, I think number three child was not in the conversation, and these words came out, and if you know what's good for you, you'll stay out of this. Through which I shuddered, because where did they pick up that? Yes, from my wife. No. From me and my wife. They were, you know, have you heard that? For those who have kids, when your children finally come out with words that are just your words, and you say things like, don't say that. I mean, I can say that, but don't you say that. It sounds terrible coming out. But it was, you know, as a parent, my lack of integrity. You know, you can't talk like that. I can talk like that, but don't you talk like that. And I can point my fingers at the church and other Christians and blame them and say, aren't you terrible, aren't you? Look, can't you get it? But have you heard of the old saying, whenever you point the finger, be careful? Have you heard that one? It's an old corny one, isn't it? But it's true. How many fingers are pointing back at you? There's at least three fingers pointing at you. Uh-oh, the page numbers are out. 5, 6, 7. So how does the church be the role model, if you like, of the Christ that Gandhi liked? But what he saw trying to reflect it didn't match up. In a post-Christendom world, and, you know, we've got to work it out, I wonder, this is my theory. I could be completely wrong. It's time for the church actually to stop talking. Because we've done lots of that. And we tried to have heady conversations and arguments. But I think we've lost the space for words and things. I'll give you an example of a young person that has been staying with us recently. His life has been messy from the beginning. And he's been staying with us on the property with his mum. He's in, you know, about that 13, 14 year age. There's a wonderful book, if you want to get it, called The King Buffhead Syndrome. It says there's lots of 13, 14 year olds out there that just think they're entitled to everything. I think he fitted it pretty well. He thought the world owed him everything. Anyway, that's one side, but another side, if he's 14, he's been seeing the same psychologist for 7 years. You work it out. He started seeing a psychologist at, you know, seven. He's been seeing counsellors, school counsellors, police counsellors, police, friends. And in one of his rages, where we were trying to work hard how to manage him, because it was getting difficult. The police were turning up, just... This is where I reckon Jesus would cry. He would get arrested, thrown in a paddy van, taken down to the Royal, to the psych ward, to be discharged, to be sent home, to potentially be picked up the next night, to be thrown in a paddy wagon, to be taken to the Royal, to be told there's nothing wrong. And that's where he was at. And I thought, oh, well, I guess I need to start doing some youth work, really, don't I? And this lad would twice scream at me in tears, just saying, I don't want to talk. I don't want to talk. You can see the bottling up, can't you? All those years. He was suffering anxiety and you know, we sat in a meeting where a well-meaning family member said, "You know what? You need to go to Headspace and you need to unload and talk to some people, because you're bottling this all up." And you could just see the rage building in him. I can still see him rocking backwards and forwards in the car with tears down his eyes, going, I don't want to talk. Eventually, after trying that for you, it takes me a little while, I worked it out. Somehow, I have to reach this young person and I'm not allowed to use words. And I had to say to him, okay, we're going to meet, but I'm not going to talk. I'm talking to a counsellor, I said, of course that's what he needs. He doesn't need you to talk. He just needs you to be. He just needs you to be with him. He just needs you to back him. And that's what we had to do. It was good that he punched a hole in the door. I'm hopeless at fixing doors, and I told him, but I said, but you and I have to fix that door. He said, sure, I'll help you fix the door. But there was no talking, there was no counselling. It was just, let's do something together. Going up to the house, he was playing, I don't know, some Xbox game, and I said, just sat there. What are you doing? You know, in the last few 20, 48 hours, we actually started to make some progress. And he started talking. But it was only clear when he knew I wasn't going to talk. I just had to do it. I think that's what we've been called to as a church, is to stop saying what you're going to do and stop talking about, just do it. Matthew 5, 13 to 15. So it talks about being salt and light. Yep. I wonder that actually what the world out there is looking is a big salt mine. Everyone wants salt in their foods. Food tastes better with salt, doesn't it? But actually, the world out there actually does want God. They do want a saviour. They just don't know it. And I could talk until I'm blue in the face, telling them they need it, but actually, they just want to see it in action. So that's why I think I go, the time for talk is over. It's time just to be. Who watched that wedding? Couple, you know that wedding? Yeah? Which wedding? Go to the next slide, it'll jolt your memory. That one? It's interesting. This is Bishop, is it Michael Curry? Just one of the sides. We must discover the power of love, the redemptive power of love. Have you noticed the world is talking? I know what was God doing. He had an audience of about 1.3 billion. And from what I can see, they liked what they heard. I don't think it was just they liked the Prince Philip and Camilla not knowing which way to look. They liked what they heard. Richard Conde was on the radio last night and he said, it's interesting, if you picked up, did you get yesterday's paper? Saturday's paper. One of the editorials, a week later, is the wider community still talking about that sermon? A message of power, a message of love. See, when the wider world sees it, they want it. They desperately want it. What you have, what I have, the world wants. And they're so scared of it, if you like, they think it's dangerous. Couple of verses to jump to. And I've probably gone way over. I've gone way over time. My wife's already done this once, which means, yeah, I'm way over time. Oh, now I can't read that. Matthew 22, Jesus starts saying, look, the greatest, you know, he talks about which is, they ask him, teacher, what's the greatest commandments? Well, love all your heart. Love your Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and greatest. And the second is to love your neighbour as yourself. Well, it's like the person that said, the problem is we do love our neighbour like we love ourselves. Problem is we don't love ourselves. So that's we love the neighbour like ourselves. But reading commentary, he said, actually, there's another one. It's actually the new commandment, he says, love one another in the same way I have loved you. You must love one another. So we often think, I've got to love my neighbour the way I love myself. We say, well, that's the commandments, and they're important. But he says the new commandment is not, did you see how I did it? You now need to go do that. See how Jesus loved? How he put his life on the line for his mates, if I call you his mates. Because he said, this is how they'll recognize that you are my disciples, when they see the love you have for each other. There's a challenge. He's not actually talking about out there. He said, do it in here. I'll jump on the bridge and go, I bet there are people in here who don't get along. Why? Because it's a bunch of people and that's how it works, you know. I don't get along with everyone, you know. I don't get along with my brothers. But I've been challenged to go, Dave, you need to work it out. John 15:12. My commandment is this, love each other as I have loved you. The biggest mission field. I need to wind up. Do you know where my biggest mission field is? My biggest mission field is called David Morris Rowe. It's the miracle to change me. Because actually I need to change me. If I change me, maybe I will, or what I stand for, will look attractive. But if I just keep trying to change you and them without changing me, they'll point the finger at me, they'll say, you're hypocritical. Having kids, you know, I know if I don't get it right, they're watching me. And if I can do the miracle of changing me and letting Christ change me and opening my heart and being heart to Christ change me and work on the parts I don't want him to work on and opening my heart to the parts I don't want him to see, that is when the miracles will start happening. I reckon this is the job for us at the moment. It's the job for me. Here's a monk, about 1100, wrote this. When I was young, I wanted to change the world. I found it was difficult to change the world, so I thought, I'll try and change my nation. When I found I couldn't change the nation, I began to focus on my town. I'll change my town. I couldn't change my town. And as an old man, I tried to change my family. And now I'm an old man, I realise the only thing I can change is myself. And suddenly I realised that if long ago I had changed myself, I could have made an impact on my family. My family and I could have made an impact on our town. Their impact could have changed the nation, and I could indeed have changed the world. I'm 50-something. For those that being used, for those that are younger, take heed. Don't wait till you're old to go, if only I'd changed myself a long time ago. Mind you, if you're old, like me, it's still okay to start changing yourself. So, the topic I have, if it was all up to me. If it was all up to me, the thing is, it is all up to me. It is all up to you. To do the soul work, to do the inside work, so that eventually your life will just be salt and light. And for those of you who have done the inside work and are salt and light, well done, good and faithful servants, keep doing it. So my challenge is for the church and for us, and my challenge is for me. It's time to do the inside work. It's time to let Jesus once again. In that verse where he says, I stand at the door and knock. He's not actually talking to the unbeliever out of Revelations. He's talking to the Christian. If you open the door, I'm willing to come in. But sometimes we just need to open the door and let him in again and again and again and again. I'll leave it there. Before my wife has a hernia doing. It's been great being here. I should say, just as an end, if you are someone like me a while ago going, I don't know that I can believe this, you know what I mean? Hang in there. Talk to someone. Get people to pray with you. Be honest with God and say, I'm struggling. There is a way back, and it could be richer than it ever was before. Don't give up. Hang on. Thanks, Thomas.
Well, thank you, David. Really enjoyed that. Really appreciate your honesty and candor there. And I hope that as a church, we take that challenge to heart and work on changing ourselves to become more Christ-like. We do have time for one more song, I think. The best song ever. My Lighthouse. So the musicians will come up, we'll sing that, and we'll finish the service as that song finishes. And we have a very special morning tea to celebrate the youth service out there, so unwind your belts a notch and go out and enjoy that. Also, can I get the deacons to do the offering while we do all that? Jesus' birthday! Woo! So, yeah.
Wrestling and in my doubts, in my failures, you won't walk out. Your great love will lead me through. You are the peace in my troubled sea. Oh, you are the peace in my troubled sea. In the silence, you won't let go. In the questions, your truth will hold. Your great love will lead me through. You are the peace in my troubled sea. You are the peace in my troubled sea.
join us out the back for some fellowship. Look forward to seeing you there.
Good job, guys.